It's the Agenda Podcast for July 8th through the 14th from 91.3 WUKY. We're here to keep you informed about the most interesting, unusual, and fun stuff to do in Lexington and this region every week. And on each program, we invite a special guest to share their agenda with us. We'll take a closer look at one of those events and also have a member of the WUKY team tell us what's on their mind. Well, our guest this time is known quite well for his work on stage over many years here in Lexington, from Shakespeare to Edward Albee, Grand Night for Singing, and I even recall seeing him impersonate Abraham Lincoln one time. His name is Roger Leeser. Welcome to our microphone, Roger.
Well, thank you. It's good to be here.
Can you do that Lincoln voice for me?
No, that's a boomer. You know, actually, I played it twice. I played what you're
Aaron
describing.
Copland's Lincoln right. Portrait.
But I also, there was an opera, and this would have been in 1971. It was an opera about Mary Todd Lincoln's insanity trial. And I was the stage manager of that production, and the fellow who was playing Lincoln found out at the final dress rehearsal that they needed a dead body to be carried from Ford's Theater to the house across the street where Lincoln actually died. And he refused to do it, and his agent backed him up. And so I got to play Abraham Lincoln horizontally on the Ford Theater stage.
Well.
Yes.
Now, not everybody can say that. No,
and I was line perfect.
That is the advantage of playing a corpse, isn't
it? It is.
It is. So your day job for many years, and one of the ways that I got to know you best was at Liquor Barn, and you've been retired for a while from that. What are you doing now?
I've been thinking and reading and writing, and occasionally got to do a little theater.
You've got a blog?
I do. It's at junesboy.com. Junesboy is all one word, and it's been going on for 2 or 3 years now, and there's a whole lot of stories from Lexington's theater past in that.
And you said movie reviews, too?
A few movie reviews, mm-hmm. but not new ones.
Uh-huh. Well, those are the best ones.
That's right.
The older films.
That's right.
That's me. Sure. I'm a classic movies guy all over.
Oh, yeah. These are classics.
Yeah.
Classics that if you could stay awake at the drive-in, you might see it at 2 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah. And they might think about showing it on Turner Classic Movies.
They just might. Yeah.
All right. Well, Roger Leeser, our main purpose here is to talk about what's going on this week. So what are your top three things happening in the area?
Well, I love summer in Lexington. You know, we do take advantage of the warm weather that we have, and we dodge around the rain. And there's a whole lot going on next week. But what's really interesting is that there's a whole lot of theater going on all at one time. And some of it has a connection to the classics. You know, we have a couple of productions that are connected to Shakespeare. One is by Shakespeare. It's Much Ado About Nothing, and that's being done by the Kentucky Conservatory Theater under the banner of Summerfest 2019.
What used to be was it Shakespeare in the Park? Is that what it's called?
It's been Shakespeare in the Park.
Yeah.
It's been Shakespeare Fest. It's been Summerfest. It's been a variety of things. And it's been all over town, too. You know, it originated at Woodland Park. And then it went to Bell Court, and then it went to Woodland Park, and then out to the Arboretum for a long time. And now it's back at Woodland Park, which I think is its natural home. You know, it's a place you can walk to, so it means that the crowd that is drawn, which is huge, the crowd is very diverse, and it's just one of the more interesting places to be on a summer night in Lexington.
And a green space always seems right for Shakespeare.
It does. It gives you that feeling of being a groundling and be on your blanket and hovering around the stage and feeling like if you wanted to comment on what's going on, you could. You know, it's that close and it's that interesting.
Now, you were in Much Ado About Nothing several years ago. Tell us about that.
Yes, it was a production by On the Verge Theater, Ave Lawyers Theater Group. And it was, she rewrote the whole thing and changed the time, put it in modern times and brought in modern politics to it and called it just Much Ado. And we did it at Central Christian Church using about 9 different spaces, and the audience moved with us through every space. It's a fascinating Shakespeare, and it's really accessible to the audience. And there's the thing to really look for if you go to see Much Ado, is really pay attention to the scenes between Beatrice and Benedick. They're two of the finest duet scenes in the English language. They're witty, and they have such pathos about them. And there's a moment when Beatrice's best friend has been spurned by Benedick's best friend, and she wants revenge. And she and Benedick have fought their way to this love of each other, and she stops that progress with just two words. He says, "What can I do?" And she says, "Kill Claudio." And everything, it's that moment Peter Brook talks about in the theater where all the themes are in that next moment as we see him struggle with loyalty and love and violence and revenge. It's all right there in one moment. And that's worth the price of admission just to see that culminating moment.
And that is this weekend.
It is. Again, Woodland Park, July 11th through 13th, and I believe it's free. Just take your blanket, pick out a good spot, and get ready to enjoy it.
Now, you mentioned a modern dress version of Much Ado, but we have a modernized Romeo and Juliet that's also opening this week.
Yes. You know, it might be the finest American musical. West Side Story, Leonard Bernstein. It's Romeo and Juliet. What a combination that is. And the work that Lindy Franklin Smith and her husband Jeremy Smith have done with the Lex, with these productions, these summertime productions at the Opera House, is just phenomenal. It's lifted all of America, all of Lexington's theater to a new level. And this will be truly worth seeing. Colton Ryan used to be from Lexington. Now he's in New York and has been on Broadway. He's coming back to play one of the major roles. The other New York actors and other actors from Chicago are coming in to play major roles. And it also features some of our best local performers. Paul Thomas is in it. And Nick Acosta, who we saw in Grand Night this last year. Joseph Wrightson, who we saw in Ragtime, playing a wonderful role.
Powerful show that was.
Yes, that was. And this will be. And Ragtime was also a production of Lindy and Jeremy's. So that gives you a taste of the quality that we're talking about.
And when are those performances?
Those performances are July 11th through 14th. At the Opera House. And if you want tickets to that, you can call 859-233-3535 and get tickets to it. It's the Lexington Theater Company, sometimes just called the Lex. And that's going to be, well, it'll be big crowds, it'll be a big cast, it'll be a big show, and you'll have a big time.
And there's a third show, a little bit smaller, but one that you had mentioned.
Just about the opposite in terms of magnitude. On the Verge, Ave Lawyers Company, Ave always comes up with these incredibly intelligent concepts for her theater. She does site-specific theater, which means you're doing theater in a space that already exists that is what it would be appropriate to the piece that's being done. You know, she did the Lillian Hellman's Little Foxes down at the Bodley Bullock House. And again, the audiences are tiny. I don't know how many she has for this show, but for Little Foxes and its sequel, each show could only seat 24 people a night.
And that's what's interesting about this, too, is this is also a sequel. So they've already done A Doll's House.
This is Henry Gibson's A Doll's House, which is a great play. And a play that, if anything, is more relevant today than it ever has been in the 100 years that it's existed.
Which is true of so much of Ibsen's work, by
yes.
the way. It remains, unfortunately in some ways, it remains very modern.
Yes. And the end of A Doll's House is just jarring. And audiences argue over it because should she have left? Should she do this? Should she have spoken? Should she have spoken sooner? All those things, you hear people talk about it after the show's over, arguing, couples arguing about it. And he leaves it at that. Well, Lucas Nauth did not leave it at that. Lucas Nauth has written a sequel called A Doll's House Part 2, Hello. And she comes back after 15 years or so, and we see another side of the doll's house. Now, what Ave has done is she cast a doll's house and did it, and with this same cast is doing the next show. And it's going to be done at the Brand Barrow House, 203 East 4th Street. And I don't know this house, but it'll be a small audience. You'll move from room to room with the actors. You know, there'll be times when actors might be doing a piece of stage business 12 to 15 inches away from you.
It's the most intimate kind of theater you're ever going to experience. I've been to a production of, I believe it was The Seagull.
Yes.
By Chekhov.
Yeah.
And was done this way. And it's just, it's almost beyond theater. It's as if you are part of the story.
Yes. When we did Little Foxes, Paul Thomas and Joan Rue had a scene as husband and wife. And it was an argument. And of course, this is, 1880s in the South. And an argument is always won by the husband. And he won it in the usual way at that time, is he slapped her. And when we performed that, one night he slapped her, and one gentleman in the audience rose to his feet and was about to make things right. And his wife had to pull him back into the show. But that's how real it is. Mm-hmm. You know, you see movies sometimes which play with the conceit of the movie coming through the screen to the audience. This is the opposite. Ave takes the audience and pulls you into the screen, and you're in it. And that's pretty stunning.
It's a unique experience.
It is. It's unique for the audience and amazing for the actors. You know, it takes a different kind of discipline, and you want to be immersed and yet find some way to keep that fourth wall there so that it's not hurtful. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't want things to be so real that they hurt. It can pinch a little bit, but not hurt.
We're going to have a very busy week because there's so much going on, and these three shows are happening at virtually the same time. But thank you so much for bringing these to our attention.
Roger Leeser. Enjoy them.
For a closer look at Summerfest's production of Shakespeare's Much Ado About Nothing, we've got director Matthew Johnson on the line. Welcome to the agenda, Matt.
Thank you, Tom.
Well, what should we know about this play and your production?
Our production is set just after World War II, as the boys are coming home. And the play is very much about a relationship between Benedict and Beatrice. And she has been kind of taken the mantle in our production, kind of like Rosie the Riveter, as the boys were gone to war. And then as they come back, she and Benedict get into this heated argument, love affair that they have, bickering. Neither one of them wants to admit that they're in love with the other, but they totally are. And it's very much like an old screwball comedy from the 30s or 40s. And they're the smartest people in the room in this romantic comedy that turns into tragedy after a few kind of fits and starts in the plot.
There's a little bit of Taming of the Shrew here and also a little bit of Othello, isn't there?
Yeah, a little bit. More Taming of the Shrew than Othello, but our villain is definitely a villain. He says right from the get-go that he's a villain, and he tries to have the plot go his way a couple of different times, and it doesn't quite work. And then late in the play, the last three quarters of the play, it starts to work and it gets really tragic for a bit, but everything turns out fine because it is a comedy. That means there's a wedding in the end.
And that is one thing about Shakespeare comedies. Well, and the tragedies, too, is the villains don't hide. They let you know right away they're bad guys.
Yeah, you know, it's before Freud, so there's no such thing as subtext in Shakespeare. So the villains, that's part of what makes them delicious, too, is that they're completely unrepentant, and Don John, the villain, looks right at the audience and says, "I am a villain," which is delicious in its own way.
Well, you mentioned that the setting for this play is after World War II. You've got a Rosie the Riveter-type character. What prompted you to put this classic play into the mid-20th century?
Well, part of our mission statement as the Appalachian Shakespeare Center is to promote agency and citizenship in learners and audience members through the works of Shakespeare. So we are very much about updating Shakespeare, not that it needs to be updated, but we want people to be able to feel like they own it and understand it, and we want to make it as palatable as possible for folks. So we're always doing anachronistic fun things with the shows. We try to keep them pretty lean as well. The show runs about 95 minutes. So with that in mind, we came to it, how much fun could we have with this show, and place it in a place that people are going to be able to understand things right away? Because the text is so dense, we want to give people as many kind of iconic clues to characters as they can to kind of help them follow along. So we need a war where everybody comes home and is happy. And the only one that I can think of in America recently is World War II. And we get to make fun of the bad guys in World War II because our bad guys are kind of clownish in a way. And it's always fun to make fun of the Axis powers in World War II.
Well, you mentioned your Appalachian Shakespeare Center at EKU. Talk a little bit about the center and its work.
Well, we've been producing Shakespeare for the last 3 years here at EKU. And last year, we really got started in earnest with our Loose Cannon project. And that's a project where we go into schools, high schools mostly, and each school is assigned their own play to work on. And we send members of our company, our acting company from the summer, as Shakespearean actors into the classroom to kind of work with them on a project that the kids and the teachers design. And it can be anything from production to something written to they could create a science project based on there's a project in Cincinnati called the Project 38 at the Cincinnati Shakespeare Company. And they do our project is very much based on that. And they go into 38 schools every year. And one of the projects they did was a robot war based on the Wars of the Roses. So it can be anything. We were talking about doing meat pies in a cooking class based on Titus Andronicus. Of course, we wouldn't cook Goths into that, but of course, probably pies with lamb or something. But so it doesn't have to be just theater production oriented. It can be anything. This is, like I said, our mission is to promote agency and citizenship. And so we want these people, the kids in Appalachia, to really feel like they can have some ownership over Shakespeare and kind of get him down off the shelf and let him play around with him, and get the language into their bodies and into their minds and kind of empower them to create their own narratives with it. So we did that with 8 different schools in our pilot project. And then at the end of the spring, around Shakespeare's birthday, we brought them all to EKU to have a celebration where everybody shared their work and had a day of workshops and stuff. So we're going to keep expanding that. And we've got a few other projects that we're doing, as well as the summer production every year.
Loose Cannon sounds wonderful. I wish we'd had your help when I did Midsummer Night's Dream in my high school when I was a kid.
Me too.
They weren't quite thinking so broadly about Shakespeare back then, unfortunately or fortunately.
Yeah. Well, that's what we're trying to do, is loosen it up and let everybody feel like they're part of their own, you know, education over these things that can feel very far away.
Well, you talk about relating Shakespeare to a modern audience, and we often hear that Shakespeare's English and Appalachian English are related in a way. Do you find that's true, and does that help make Shakespeare more accessible to people in this region?
Yeah, one of the things that we found, especially in some of the theater classes out like in Hazard, they had some trouble with some adjudicators in some of their theater festivals kind of knocking them for their accents. And personally, I don't believe that there's anything wrong with anyone's accent. If you can be understood, then your accent is perfectly well. It's worked for you so far, so why would you change it? But some of the scholars believe that the way that Appalachian accents sound is probably closer to what was spoken in Shakespeare's day than what we tend to do when, as a generic kind of an idea of an English accent, is not anywhere near what it would have sounded like. So I've been doing Shakespeare. I've done almost all of his plays. I've worked up at Cincinnati Shakespeare Center, or Company, for many years, and we never hardly do an English accent, and I always tell people, use your own accent. The only time you would use a different accent is if you're playing multiple characters. But there's all kinds of accents in England, and Shakespeare's plays take place in many other parts of the world. In fact, most of his plays don't even take place in England. except for the histories. And he wrote anachronistically all the time. So the stuff that we're doing ideally allows people to bring themselves to the plays and then discover themselves within the plays and have a connection with really just the breadth of humanity, as Shakespeare wrote about throughout history, from ancient Roman times all the way up through Elizabethan, and then we bring it up to be as modern or futuristic as possible. So the Appalachian dialect fits in easily. It has its own musicality, like Shakespeare does. And once the kids kind of get into the rhythm of it and they realize they can use their own voices, a lot of times it really opens them up.
Well, it sounds like we're in for quite a treat this weekend.
Hope so. Yeah. we had about 500 people in our first weekend, and we hope as the word gets out, we'll have at least that many again this weekend. Looks like it's going to be beautiful.
All right. Well, thank you, Matthew Johnson. Appreciate your work, and looking forward to seeing Much Ado About Nothing this weekend.
All right. Thanks, Tom.
Summerfest's Much Ado About Nothing returns to Woodland Park this Thursday, July 11th through Sunday. Tickets and more information are at mykct.org. And this week with our staff pick is Samantha Letterman. Welcome to the Agenda microphone.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
And you are just about to go in the studio and work on a piece for WKY News that also happens to be an event that's coming up this weekend. So tell us about that.
I'm excited. It's two of my favorite things. It's the police horses and it's the Kentucky Horse Park. It's one of their biggest events. It's a huge tourist attraction. It happens every year, and this year is their 30th anniversary, and it's Briar Fest. And I didn't know anything about this before I came here. It's the little Briar model horses that you see. They do this every year. It's a festival of the model horses, and you can come and see the real horses that inspired the models that you see. And you have children, obviously, but then you have women, men, people of all ages who've collected models all their lives. They come, they camp out at 3 or 4 or 5 in the morning to get tickets, to get the best place in line, to come and see the horses that they've idolized for so long, to see them do demonstrations. Every year they have a celebration horse, is that it's called, is a horse that they pick as the sort of special feature. And this year it's going to be the Kentucky Horse Park Mounted Unit's very own Officer Oliver, he's called, and his partner, Captain Lisa Rakes. I went and talked to them both last week, and I'm putting that together, a little packet about them both and their career together, and we're going to hopefully play that before the weekend, so you'll get to know a little bit more about them before you go out to the horse park.
So we'll listen for that on Morning Edition and All Things Considered this week.
Exactly,
on 91.3 WKY. Samantha, are there other major equestrian events happening this summer that we should know about later
Tons.
On?
Tons. There's major things happening this weekend at the horse park at the same time as Briarfest. If you can avoid the crowds and the little girls getting into Briarfest, there's also Champagne Run at the park, which is an event like a little mini Rolex that will be going on of all levels up to intermediate, and that's Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. There's also a saddlebred show going on at the same time. So there's plenty to see at the horse park, as well as the normal exhibitions that you can see every single day, like the Museum of the Horse and the Saddlebred, and everything that you can see every day during the week, you can see that's always open. There's also, we're going to have the Retired Racehorse Program comes in October. That's a yearly thing that's become one of their biggest attractions. And let me see. I mean, just so there's something happening at the horse park every week. There's the national show coming in November. There's racing coming to Keeneland later on in October, of course. So there's plenty to see, plenty to do.
Meeting retired racehorses is really an experience. I got to meet Smarty Jones right after I moved here, and you feel the presence of
yes.
of these creatures and the power that they have, and they know it too. Isn't it interesting?
They definitely have a certain charisma to them, and definitely have an aura. But and then the Retired Racehorse Project is something slightly different. It's trainers have to apply up to a year before, and they take horses off the track that have finished racing, and then they have a year to work with the horse, and then they all meet in October over the course of 3 or 4 days and enter in 10 different divisions, be it barrel racing, be it show horse, be it hunter division or trail riding, be it jumping, and then they pick the winner of each division, and then they pick the most wanted thoroughbred at the very end. Mm. And you've it's a test of training, and it's also an example of how versatile these racehorses can be. That once they finish racing, there's a real job for them, and they can be useful. And you know, that's not the end of their careers; it's just the start of another one.
Yeah, other than those few that got to stand at stud in the past, there wasn't much of a life for racehorses
and
other
than
that.
That's really changing, and the exposure has been something wonderful. And that's been that's only been going on a few years, but it's got exponentially bigger each year, and we have trainers coming from all over the world. And then because it coincides with the Keeneland race meet, we have trainers who trained those horses when they were racing. They come out of interest and say, oh, that's fantastic, I remember training that horse, and it's so great to see it get another job. And you have show people come out because a bunch of the horses will then be offered for sale at the end of the thing. So then they'll come, and if you're shopping for a nice horse, it's a great marketplace, great to see all these horses in one place. So, yeah, that's another thing that's, if you want to look forward to. If you can't make it to Briarfest, come out in October to that.
Fantastic. Thank you, Samantha.
Thank you.
Briarfest happens Friday through Sunday at the Kentucky Horse Park. There's additional information at briarhorses.com. In addition to everything else we've talked about on the agenda, this is Lexington Burger Week. That means pizza burgers, veggie burgers, the ever-popular PB&J Bacon Brie Burger, and about 37 more. These are at locations all around town, each one $5. The tasty details are at lexingtonburgerweek.com. The Harry Dean Stanton Festival is also happening at various locations around Lexington, and then there's the Berea Craft Fair. Perhaps on your way to one or more of these, you might just want to stop by the Meadowthorpe Shopping Center on Lees Town Road for a little slice of paradise. The brand new John Prine mural outside the soon-to-be-open Apollo Pizza Shop. For 91.3 WUKY, I'm the one with the illegal smile, Tom Godell.